The gospel lesson this morning comes from the gospel according to Luke, the 18th chapter. We'll be beginning with the first verse. Then Jesus told them a parable about their need to pray always and to never lose heart. He said, "In a certain city there was a judge who neither feared God nor had respect for people. In that city there was a widow who kept coming to him saying, 'Grant me justice against my opponent.' For a while he refused, but later he said to himself, 'Though I have no fear of God and no respect for anyone, yet because this widow keeps bothering me, I will grant her justice so that she may not wear me out by continually coming.' And the Lord said, 'Listen to what the unjust judge says. And will not God grant justice for his chosen ones who cry to him day and night? Will he delay in helping them? I tell you, he will quickly grant justice to them. And yet, when the Son of Man comes, he will find faith on earth.'" This ends the reading from the gospel. Well, in this morning's readings, we have two women with very different styles of dealing with authority. Now, allow me to set the stage for this morning's first story from the Hebrew Scriptures, the story of Jael, probably one of the lesser known of the biblical characters. Tensions have been high in the land of Israel between them and the Canaanites for some 20 years. Jabin, the king of Hazor, and Sisera, his general, have cruelly oppressed the Israelites. And Sisera has become the face of the Canaanite occupation, a much hated and vilified figure throughout at least the northern part of Israel. Deborah was the judge over Israel. Remember, in those days before the kings, the judges were the ones who ruled the nation. It's interesting how matter-of-factly she's listed on the list of those who ruled over Israel. She's the only woman who is so recognized. But Deborah was also a prophet, and she kind of held court under the palms of Deborah, where people would come to her for advice and her wisdom in solving problems. In time, Deborah called Barak from the land of Naphtali to raise an army of 10,000 troops from the tribes of Zebulun and Naphtali and lead them into battle against Sisera and the Canaanites. Barak balked, asking Deborah to go into battle with him, for he was fearful of the Canaanites. As a result, Deborah prophesied that Barak would be successful, but that he would not receive the glory, as God would sell Sisera into the hands of a woman. Barak's apprehension was well-founded, as his troops were vastly outnumbered and ill-equipped to confront Sisera's troops fortified with 900 chariots of iron. Meanwhile, back at the ranch, as we used to hear on Saturday morning westerns, We have Jael, the wife of Heber the Kenite. Now, the Kenites were descended from Cain, according to Scripture, son of Adam and Eve. And here we pick up the story now from Judges chapter 4, beginning with verse 14. Then Deborah said to Barak, "Up, for this is the day on which the Lord has given Sisera into your hands. The Lord is indeed going before you." So Barak went down from Mount Tabor with 10,000 warriors following him. And the Lord threw Sisera and all of his chariots and his army into a great panic before Barak. Sisera got down from his chariot and fled away on foot, while Barak pursued the chariots and the army to Harosheth Goyim. All the army of Sisera fell by the sword, and no one was left. Now Sisera had fled on foot to the tent of Jael, the wife of Heber the Kenite. For there was peace between King Jabin of Hazor and the clan of Heber the Kenite. Jael came out to meet Sisera and said to him, "Turn aside, my lord. Come, abide with me and have no fear." So he turned aside to her and into the tent, and she covered him with a rug. Then he said to her, "Please give me a little water to drink, for I am thirsty." So she opened a skin of milk and gave him a drink and covered him. He said to her, "Stand by the entrance to the tent, and if anyone comes and asks you, 'Is anyone here?' say no." But Jael, wife of Heber, took a tent peg, and she took a hammer in her hand, and she went softly to him and drove the tent peg into his temple until it went down into the ground. He was lying fast asleep from weariness, and he died. This ends the reading from the book of Kings. Now, this story, like many in the Bible, seems quite straightforward. Jael defeated the enemy of Israel and was immortalized in the Song of Deborah, from which we heard Ed read earlier. But, like many other stories in the Bible, when considered more carefully, raises some ethical and moral questions. There are some important questions for which we have no answer. Why had Heber and Jael come to live among the Israelites? And what was their stake in this war with the Canaanites, their former allies? And the text is ambiguous intentionally, I think, by what was implied in Jael's invitation for Sisera to turn aside to her and come into the tent and have no fear. We're not told what Jael's motive was for assassinating Sisera. Perhaps she had become an ardent believer in Yahweh, the God of Israel, and this was an act of holy war. But the battle was already over. Or perhaps it was that Sisera was a Canaanite, the despised enemy of her neighbors, making this an act of racial profiling. Or she could have acted out of resentment for the way that Sisera treated her and her neighbors, which would make it an act of retaliation and retribution. Or she may have feared what Sisera might do to her when he awoke, making this an act of self-defense. She was simply standing her ground. Some would argue that whatever the case, Sisera was a bad man, and whatever happened to him was for the general good. He might not have been guilty of this particular crime, but he was guilty of many others, and he simply got what was coming to him. But we need not think back too far to see the devastating consequences of this kind of thinking, because someone was an undesirable character does not mean they're not worthy of justice. In an incredible understatement that nonetheless makes an important point, and I'm going to give you the title of a work here that is lengthy, and don't be confused by it, but I thought it important for you to hear because it's a foreshadowing of the perspective. Catherine Sackenfeld writes in her work, "Deborah, Jael, and Sisera's Mother, Readings of Scripture in a Cross-Cultural Context." Deborah, Jael, and Sisera's Mother. Okay. The quote is, "Jael's actions were a violation of hospitality, rendering Sisera something of a victim." I think we can agree it was a violation of hospitality to drive a tent peg through his forehead. Again, we do not need to look very far to see people for whom we may have little sympathy become victims in their own countries, their own neighborhoods, and even in their own homes. Sackenfeld continues, many readers are troubled by the way Jael tricks Sisera into trusting her, a trust that then will lead to his death. Do you see what happens when we look more deeply into a Bible story? The fairy tale ending, and they lived happily ever after, often becomes much more complicated. Well, actually, to put this in its historical context, the ending would have been something more along the lines of, they killed all the warriors and pillaged and plundered the Canaanites, taking the women as wives for themselves and their sons, and they lived happily ever after. In our world, such stories of violations of hospitality and the betrayal of trust by would-be heroes conjure up images of such victims as Trayvon Martin, Atiana Jefferson, and the Kurds in northern Syria. People in the wrong place, at the wrong time, on the wrong side of history, and dead. So, betraying trust and violating hospitality may not be the perfect answer to all of our problems. But we have another story with another way of dealing with authority in our gospel lesson. And here I repeat a little bit of what we read earlier. In a certain city, there was a judge who neither feared God nor had respect for people. In that city, there was a widow who kept coming to him saying, grant me justice. Continually confronting the forces of injustice, naming the injustice and demanding change requires courage, perseverance, and patience. But it preserves our integrity. We need betray no one, and we don't have to kill anyone. In our world, it is sometimes hard to keep faith that truth and justice will indeed prevail. It seems that people are blinded by greed, intimidated by power, and seem to love the lies. But if we keep speaking the truth, refusing to back down, refusing to go away, in time, we trust that we will effect change. The arc of the moral universe may bend slowly, but it is our faith that it bends toward justice. Little good news. We live in a world where the poor, those who are unable to care for themselves, ethnic, racial, and religious minorities, women and children, and even animals have greater rights and protection than ever before. This is no accident, and it did not just happen. It is a result of many people standing up to cruelty, oppression, and injustice, refusing to back down, refusing to go away, naming the injustice, and demanding change. We may have along the way We may have a long way yet to go, but what is it that we say? We've come too far to turn back now or to lose hope. It is true that in some cases, victories have been won by violence. We have had our JLs, and we may, in deep down in the recesses of our souls, rejoice and celebrate in their victories. But many have died for those victories. As Bob Dylan put it, how many deaths will it take till we know that too many people have died? In other cases, the determined courage of those committed to nonviolence and positive change have prevailed and transformed our world into a better place than it has ever been, with no blood shed except perhaps their own. They may have suffered, but they did not betray anybody, and they did not kill anybody. So we press on towards the victory, but victory at what cost? Do we sacrifice our integrity? Do we sacrifice our very souls? For what does it profit us if we gain justice or the whole world, but in the process lose ourselves?